when you're trying to reproduce a process, it needs to be standardized. Otherwise, it's very difficult to replicate consistently. And that's really what we're trying to get right in a fab shop is the repeatability, the consistency, over and over and over again.
Yeah. Hello, innovators. I'm Todd Wyant, and welcome to the Bridging the Gap podcast presented by Applied Software Great Tech Group. You're invited to join our conversation to model the future of construction innovation and the digital transformation adventure of this great industry. We recorded this conversation live from the Advancing Prefabrication Show in Denver, Colorado. Hope you enjoyed the conversation. All right, so we are coming live from Advancing Prefab 2024 here in Denver with Ryan. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, so let's start with kind of a little bit about your journey into the industry and with prefab.
Sure. So I've been at a company called UMC. We're out of Pacific Northwest, out of the Seattle area for 16 years. And prior to that, I did work for a kind of a heavy civil earthwork, roadwork company for a few years before that. Mm-hmm. But I have like, I would say kind of the path of oddness, I guess. It's okay. Like, so I always say I don't belong in our industry. So I have a teaching degree. Okay. I graduated a teaching degree, did a little teaching, got into construction, kind of fell in love with construction. And oddly enough, my roommate in college was a CM major. And I was always like, that seems like a lot of work, you know, like the schooling. And so, I joined UMC in 2008, got super lucky. Like I got with like a really good senior project manager, and superintendent that took me under their wings. I did that for 4 years, did a little bit of traveling out of town for them. Mm-hmm. And then in 2012, they asked me to take over the fab shop. And I became the fabrication manager, so kind of helping scheduling, organizing, ordering material, putting fab packages together, kind of really going out and trying to get with our project managers and field foremen to get the work. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I've been kind of heavily involved in fab since 2012.
Yeah, nice.
That's so a long time.
A lot has changed,
yeah,
too,
in that time. Yeah, a lot has changed, yeah.
What have you noticed as some of the biggest evolutions that have happened?
Yeah, I mean, I would say for like, I'll talk specifically to UMC first, but like really the progression from, you know, we've always been, so our company is 104 years old. Mm-hmm. So we've been doing this for a long time, yeah. Right? And so but we've always been really good fabricators. And mm-hmm. I think the transition from like a fabricator to a manufacturing process mm-hmm. has really evolved not only at our company, but in the industry. I mean, we're at, you know, Advancing Prefab here, and really you hear everyone talking about that transition and how everyone's trying to go to productization, manufacturing techniques, mm-hmm. you know, standardization. And so I think that 5 years ago, even, you didn't really hear those buzzwords all that much. And now right. I don't think they're just buzzwords anymore. I think people are actually trying to do those things.
Yeah.
So it's been cool to see. I mean, and then on the other biggest one is like the tech, right? So the automation that happens, that, you know, where you can send things straight to your tooling, mm-hmm. the automation around some of the tooling. I mean, there's three robotic welder booths in the convention hall in there. That wasn't really even a thing that, unless you were like maybe in Detroit at a, you know, Ford factory or something, right. Like 10 years ago, you would have never seen that.
Right.
And now I know personally 6 or 8 contractors that have robotic welding in their shops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So maybe more. I'm probably underselling that. Probably more like 10.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. Like, that's a lot.
Right. Yeah, that's really cool. What was the journey like for you all at UMC?
As far as like fabrication, like what, you know,
yeah,
what,
yeah. And to pull in the manufacturing processes.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's been a journey, right?
Yeah.
And always say, you know, we learn a lot from our failures and,
sure.
and as much as the successes,
but sometimes more
and sometimes more. Right. But, our journey has really been centered around, you know, getting an understanding how to standardize, with as much intent as you can and make the projects less unique. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that makes sense, but like we had this old saying is like, every project's a unique snowflake, right? Mm-hmm. So because we do kind of bespoke buildings, every building is slightly different. Even we did a project for a very large client, and they had literally 2 towers on the same piece of property, and yet the like center to center on the restrooms were different, right? And so like if we can alter that and make them the same, if we can standardize on, you know, if this project always uses, you know, and our company standardizes on our pipe valve and fitting manufacturing, and if they standardize on the product selections that we use, it makes fabrication more consistent and more repeatable. And then you, that's where you get the labor savings, right? Mm-hmm. So because when you're trying to reproduce a process, it needs to be standardized. Otherwise, it's very difficult to replicate consistently. And that's really what we're trying to get, right, in a fab shop is the repeatability, the consistency, over and over and over again.
Yeah. So with that said, one of the things that's popped up already at this event in a conversation says, Ben, how do you take the manufacturing environment that is very, you know, standardized, it's clean environment, it's repeatable over and over, you're doing one set thing. How do you bring that into a much more complex construction environment where it's not the same environment, same standardization at all, but you can, how do you bring that in and then glean some of the overall processes and pull that into construction?
Yeah, I'll give you a couple examples. So like, for instance, if you can standardize on some of your material selections, mm-hmm. that is one that I think that when you talk to some of the very good, fabricators in the country, that's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. They have, we call them a material matrix. Some people call it their material standards, whatever you want to call it. But like, I'll give you an example. So we have standardized on Milwaukee valves, right? Mm-hmm. This is who we selected. And the other manufacturers are fine. There's no issue with them. But for years, one of the mistakes we would make is like, this other manufacturer is listed first, so we have to use them. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, no, we don't. They're just listed first because it's alphabetical, right? Like in the specifications. Yeah. So like, use the one that we have because we get better buying power. Mm-hmm. It's standard. We have it built in our database. So like, I don't know how many people watch this that like don't know anything about fabrication or construction, but like every valve manufacturer makes a valve that's slightly a different dimensional value.
Yeah.
And so when you didn't fabricate, no one cared. But mm-hmm. now, because I can, in a click of a button, send a fab package down to my shop, I can send the cut lengths to my tooling, and then I can have it at the shop floor on our workstations and our work cells within minutes. Mm-hmm. Like if the team elected not to use the valve that we built and we detailed with, that's a big problem for us. So mm-hmm. like that is the process. So those type of standardizations around products. The other thing that we have done, we have spent a bunch of time and effort and money, frankly, like learning about lean processing, work cells. We recently in 2022.
Hard to believe.
But yeah. I know. 2022, we moved into a new fabrication facility. We used to have a kind of a campus set up. So we had three buildings over kind of a corporate headquarters. We had a warehouse over here, and then we had a fab shop here, and then we had a plumbing shop here.
Okay.
And kind of in a campus setting. We moved all of that under one roof. So now we have a 95,000 square foot fabrication facility. But we hired an industrial engineer to help us do the layout.
Yeah.
Right. And they challenged some of our work notions of how we processed work. Some of them we changed, like what they said. Some of them we kept the way we were. But I think that's another one that, like, I would say 10 years ago, I never would have thought to hire an industrial engineer to help me do a shop layout. We just said, we know what we're doing. But
yeah,
and those guys had set up manufacturing facilities. They'd understand about work cells and mm-hmm. walk path distances and like that, counting steps. Like I heard it like at least in three different programs today about people counting steps from where you're doing the work to where your material's at to where the lay down to go shipping out. They're literally physically counting steps.
Yeah.
Again, 10 years ago, no one talked about that. So like that to me is a real indicator of the evolution of where mm-hmm. we're going as an industry, which is in my mind cool to see because it's like to me the next evolution. So, and I think the earliest question you were saying, like that is very hard to do on an actual construction site.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the industry is recognizing, and like this conference and everyone that's here is like, the more that you can move into your manufacturing facilities or plants or fab shops, whatever you want to call them, is more work that you can do in that controlled environment with that type of manufacturing versus elsewhere.
Yeah. How have you seen the buy-in of people latching on to wanting to do prefab and then being excited to really push forward in that direction?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've definitely seen a lot of good buy-in there. I mean, it's like anything, right? You have to recognize that you're a service organization now. So now you have, when you do fabrication or manufacturing and you're basically selling a product now to your client, which in this case is not just the general contractor owner, but now your field foreman or field superintendents, you have to have the mechanisms in place to service that client well. And, right. and I think that's where maybe some of the struggles early on is, you know, maybe I didn't understand that as well of like, hey, we've said we're going to do this, just do it. That doesn't work really well, right? And so trying to adopt that, like, we're going to make mistakes, though. And no one is not going to make any mistakes. But I think that the more that you standardize on your process and your procedures and then understand what broke down, the better the better your overall product will be and the less pushback you'll get. Mm-hmm. I'm sure my people get tired of hearing me say this, but I say this all the time, which is like, I almost never focus on the person that made the mistake. Mm-hmm. I always look at, is it a process breakdown? Is it a procedure breakdown? Is it training? And then finally, maybe we'll get to like the person, right? So like mm-hmm. that to me, and I would say of the stuff that we manage and we track, like 90% of it falls into either the process or training bucket. Mm-hmm. So either we have a process, it just wasn't followed, it got broken down.
Yep.
And then of that, then it was like, oh, well, that person actually never received training, or maybe they hadn't had an update on training in however many months or years or whatever. Mm-hmm. Those are the breakdowns that happen.
Yeah, I think that's a well thought out approach to that, instead of just jumping right in and trying to fix it. Take a step back and kind of see the
bigger
picture.
Yeah, it's a root cause,
well.
Right? Like when you look at lean or like any of the manufacturing processes, Six Sigma, we haven't done a ton with that, but like lean, understanding root cause analysis. And our company does a lot of like industrial work, and we've done a lot in like the heavy kind of like code type stuff. And so those, like when you do work on those sites, they're very big on root cause analysis. And I got lucky to work on some of those sites early in my career. Mm-hmm. And I learned that. And it was like, they never were like, oh, hey, Todd, why did you break this? It was like, you know, what happened? Write it down. Here's the corrective action. Here's the root cause. And it can get a little laborious, right, mm-hmm. to do that. I'm not doing that for every little thing, but the ones that matter and are like, oh, these are a common theme, let's try to track those down and figure out what's broken in our system,
right,
versus why is that person or like what happened there.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
Yeah, stop putting Band-Aids on.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%.
Fix the actual problem.
Fix the problem. Yeah, I say that all the time too. People get annoyed at me, but I say it all the time.
Nice. So let's shift over to the technology side of things. How have you seen technology change over the last few years, and what kind of trends are you noticing?
Yeah, so there's a couple, and I haven't actually brought this up to too many people, so this will be the first one. I saw this trend. So one, technology's exploded in the 16 years I've been in construction, right? I mean, and there's lots of people, like I can't imagine people that have been doing it for 30 years, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because what I've seen in half of their time is blowing my mind. Mm-hmm. But what I would say is when I first started kind of getting on like the circuit of the seeing the other fab shops, seeing the other shops that do technology, mm-hmm. I'm heavily involved in MCAA and like the fab committee and the tech committee and that type of stuff. But getting to see the other companies, was what I saw was the very best of the best had developed their own solutions, mm-hmm. right? So like they didn't rely on technology vendors or whatever. They really did. They built their own systems. Mm-hmm. And then there was a switch somewhere that like, I felt like people started buying out of the box solutions and trying to make that work for their company. And that happened for, I would say, maybe even up till right now. Mm-hmm. But I'm really starting to see like in the last year, 18 months, that like it's a little bit of a hybrid. Mm-hmm. So it's like with all the API connectors and all the stuff that you can do, it's like, okay, buying out of the box that gets you 70% of the way there. Recognize that they're never going to get you 100% of the way there.
Right.
And then you make the 30% leap. Mm-hmm. And that is like, that kind of hit me not that long ago of like, oh, this is starting to be a little bit like what it was way back in the day when you first talking to, you know, some real high end performers. You're like, how do you guys do all this stuff? And it's like, oh, well, we have three programmers on site and we built our own thing and we've done all this stuff. You're starting to see that switch with technology on, okay, well, we bought, you know, ACC, and well, it gets us halfway there, 90, 70% or whatever. And now we're going to hire a programmer and they're going to do API integrations to connect these dots and connect this thing of our homegrown solution. So that to me is kind of a huge trend to kind of keep an eye on, because I think there was like this influx of venture capital money into the construction industry maybe 4 or 5 years ago, which is great. Like, and again, for, you know, all that said, I'm not like knocking that, right? It's just, I am somewhat sympathetic to the technology vendor, because every single company does something a little different.
Right.
Right. And so like, how do you make your product that every single, you know, there's thousands of contractors, how do you make it so that they can use that? I think it's incumbent upon us to try to maybe figure out the rest of that, you know, work with them, make the product better for sure, make it, you know, attainable, but then we need to get it to the finish line a little bit, is what it seems like right now.
The industry is struggling with a communication problem and a lack of interoperability. This is causing 25% of data being recreated and almost $300 billion loss due to bad communication. Great Tech Group believes that is a problem. So they created Data Connect, an easy-to-use, no-code platform that connects critical ERP systems with cost management to form a single source of truth to empower better communication, decision-making, and project efficiency, delivering the ultimate business outcome of being on time and on budget. Visit ASTI.com/DataConnect to start saving time and money.
Yeah, well, it really starts to build that partnership between the tech provider and the end users, because the tech providers can help on the scalability and just the size and scope and, you know, put a bunch of features in there. But then it's incumbent on the end user to really create the customization and have the connectivity with their workflow and make it usable for them. So ideally, it would be a partnership, you know, working with the tech provider to help in that endeavor as well too.
But 100%.
I agree. I see that trend as well too, of people really bringing in their own kind of dev department in-house as well too, to help.
Yeah. And it just seemed, the thing that was weird, and I don't know why it didn't like hit me till recently, it felt like, I guess I didn't recognize that, it felt like that kind of went away for a while.
Yeah.
And now it's like, seems to be resurging. Like, I was talking to a company the other day, and they have like 3 full-time programmers on staff, and then they have like 2 or 3 data analysts. And I was like, that's impressive. I mean, and they're a very large contractor, very sophisticated, great contractor. But like, that is, I think you're going to see more common than not in the next 5 years, right? Like, if we were to like follow up on this in 5 years, I think you would be like, oh, it's happening more and more. If I were to make a guess, that's what I would say.
Yeah, interesting. Where do you see the emerging technologies coming in? Like, you know, the big buzzword, I feel like, in the last year is AI.
Yeah.
How do you see that affecting the way things are done?
I mean, it's, you know, again, take whatever I say with like, ignore it, whatever. I would say you should be having someone on your staff or your company figuring that out.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's like, I don't think it's going to be like, oh, I just, you know, push a button in generative design and it models my whole building for me and I don't have to have any detailers anymore. I think that's never, I mean, I don't say never, but like,
it's way, a long way long off.
but like, I use Copilot all the time. I don't know if anyone knows that. It's Microsoft Copilot. If you don't know what it is, go look it up and buy it. It's super reasonable and it'll make your life way easier. I use ChatGTP all the time. We're currently developing an in-house chatbot for our own team so that we can, because one of the things we found is like, data at a company can sometimes get siloed and you might actually have the right process, the right information, but it's super hard to find.
Yeah.
It's harder to find than it should be if you don't know where to look. And so we're currently in the process of like developing a chatbot internal that's using a large language model. That's kind of AI and like LLM, large language models, kind of become somewhat synonymous. I think they're different. They can do different functions, but if you're a company that's looking for like making sure you're relevant in the next 10 years, I would say you should be looking at those things and figuring out how to leverage it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a amazing thing, because the data can be so overwhelming. There's so much incoming data in construction that you can just drown
yeah
in it. So to tie that into the AI side of things and not have to worry as hard maybe on the governance of how you label everything, that's a huge win.
And I heard someone else say it today and I thought it was very relevant, was like, start small. Mm-hmm. So we have like an IT steering committee and we rolled it out, the idea, everyone was on board. And then like the amount of like feedback I got of like, hey, could we use it for this? Could we use it for this? And it was great. I loved that like everyone was energized about it, but also I was like, time out. Like, we're going to do this one thing with it to start. Right. Yeah. And then once we've trained it, once we've got it up and running, once we've tested the data to make sure it's not giving bad, because here's the other part of AI, right? If you've used ChatGPT or any of the other ones out there, you can get wrong data, right? Yeah. Like it just is really good at combing through it. And then when it finds what it thinks is right. So like you have to be intentional about what you put on it mm-hmm. and how you get there.
It's all about the prompts that you
and
use.
And it's all about the prompts that you use and how you structured your data. Yeah. But once you've done it, right, and you've done the legwork, it's super powerful. And so I think that is a huge deal that we're looking at. So for me, like I think that's the buzzword that you're going to see continue to grow and gain traction. And I think unlike maybe some of the other ones I've heard in the past, like the unfulfilled promise, this mm-hmm. one seems way more real to me than some of the other ones. Like this one seems like, man, we better figure out how we're going to optimize it. And I don't think it's like people are going to not like have a job anymore. I think you're going to maximize the effort of the people that you have and allow them to be more efficient is mm-hmm. if I were a betting man, that's what I would bet on.
Yeah. 100% agree. I mean, you said it yourself a minute ago that it still takes the human to critically think and see the information that's coming back, kind of do a gut check of it. Is this accurate? Is this kind of in line with where we're thinking?
Yeah.
Really, I think that the computers are great at combing through data way faster than us humans can, but we're better at that critical thinking component than computers can be. So it's going to be a true partnership between both. So on the prefab side, going back to that, any trends that you're seeing on that side coming from the conference or that you saw coming into the show?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been coming to Advancing Prefab for 5 years now, I think. So quite a while. Mm-hmm. Interested, you know, a number of years ago, like the modular volumetric was really like the big push, right? Yeah. Like I remember I came back and I was like, oh boy, we better figure this out because it seems like it's really happening. Seems like it's a little bit from a like a cube box type of a scenario. Mm-hmm. It's been more challenging for that to really crack into the market. But I would say the productization of individual items at your company, at individual companies, I've seen like a lot in the last 2 days. Like people mm-hmm. are talking about it a lot. Like, hey, here's how we do this. Here's how we do this. The other thing that I think is awesome that I've seen is, so I taught a class yesterday. There was like 100 people maybe in the room, mm-hmm. like 50% or more were electricians. Okay. And that was huge, right? Because that wasn't a
big
thing
shift.
to 10 years ago. And, you know, a lot of them were like, hey, we've only been fabricating for less than 3 years or whatever. But the fact that they're here, they're moving in the right direction, I think that's a big shift that we haven't seen. You know, we're in a pretty progressive market in Seattle. So a lot of our electrical contractors do have fab shops and do some stuff. But when you travel abroad, it's not that case. But mm-hmm. then to see it here was really, I think, great. And then I think just the continued push on fabrication, right? Like there's, I don't know that you might know the numbers, but there's like 1,000 people or more here, I think.
Yeah, over
1,000. Sure. So like 5 years ago, it was 300 or something, I think, one of the first years. So just to see the amount of people that are buying into it, I think they understand why the value of it. And I think that's great. I mean, that's the biggest trend I would see is like, I think a lot of contractors use it as a competitive advantage, which it still is if you have mm-hmm. other people that aren't doing it and there's things that you can do. But I mean, I personally believe now that like, unless you're in a market I don't know about, like you need to fab to be relevant mm-hmm. and to be kind of maybe like real in however many years. I think it's not, if you're not doing some level, it's going to be hard to compete.
Yeah. Yeah. The race has already begun. It began a couple years ago.
It began a while ago. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's weird. Like, so like UMC, like I said, 104-year-old company. We built the Columbia Center at Tower in Seattle. Uh-huh. It's the largest building in Seattle. And that was built in like 80s somewhere, 85 maybe somewhere. Our guys fabricated that whole thing, right? So like it's been around for a long time. I just think the focus on it though, like, and then the maturity and the repeatability and the it happening on every project regardless is really a cool trend that I'm seeing that's new.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm super excited about.
Yeah, I always think that's funny with prefab. We think of it as a relatively new concept, but it's been around for 100 years.
Well, you know,
like in some shape and form. It's been around for a long time.
Someone had it at a last conference I was at, and they had like a Sears Roebuck catalog where you could literally like buy a house like prefabbed like in the 70s or whatever. Yeah, so it's not new. I just think the construction makes it, like, again, the beauty of that Sears Roebuck house was like it's the same house every time. It's exactly however many square feet it was, and you weren't moving the bathroom. And that's the piece that I think like the modular side has struggled, is they're trying to use modular but yet still deploy like the uniqueness of an individual building.
Right.
And I think that's the struggle like they've had, whereas the standardization and the productization can get you there faster on an individual given project, because you can take what works for your company and apply that on almost any project and make those productivity, safety, quality, assurity gains that we're all striving for with fabrication, right?
Yeah. Now, where do you see the future of the industry? Like, what are we going to be talking about advancing prefab in 2030?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I will say one of the other trends that I've seen that I'm starting to see more of, and I'm like listening very closely, is there are a lot of the very large contractors that are starting to, I think, be true MEP firms. So forever it's been electrical, maybe a mechanical, maybe a mechanical plumbing, maybe there's a mechanical and a fire protection, but we're starting to see, you know, a company that owns a mechanical, an electrical, a plumbing, and a fire protection company, and they're going to market and saying, we'll provide you everything.
Yeah.
That's something that I would like keep an eye on, right? Like just because that makes them very competitive. Right.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And now there's, you know, maybe some risk. The client says, I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket or whatever, but I would be paying attention to that in the future.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's a right. I mean, if they can bond the whole project, they can bid the whole project, they can coordinate it, they can do what's best for the client all in house instead of competing against each other. Because, right, like if you think about our true, like standard lump sum competition bidding, is it's first in wins. So if you can beat the electricians in, then great. And that doesn't work. I gave this analogy. I'll try not to swear because I swore when I gave it last time. But I gave this analogy is like people always rag on construction because like, oh, it's, you know, you guys are trying to get to manufacturing. It's so hard. And I personally think a lot of it has to do with contracting. So imagine this scenario. Imagine like you're on a production line for a Tesla and you're the guy that's supposed to put the seats in and it's coming along the line and it's your turn to put the seats in. But instead the door guy was like, you know what? The heck with you. I'm putting the door on first, even if it makes it harder for you to get in. He puts the door on and then it goes by you and you're like, I was supposed to get in. And then like, you have to wait till the very end, the car's done. And then you put your seat in and it takes you four times longer.
Right.
That would never happen on a production line, right? They would stop the line before that happened.
Right.
But in construction, that happens every day. Right. And a lot of it is because of the contracting method, right? If you're in a lump sum, your only pursuit is what is best for me, right? It's why it's the value of IPD. There's a class later today on IPD. There's some progressive design, but like that is something that I think for the construction industry to truly progress, I think that needs to be talked about. And Amy's been talking about it. Some other people have been talking about it at the conference, but I think to truly progress the industry, that contracting method and that the realities of those needs to be looked at to really, in 2030, we're talking about everyone doing it and everyone making a ton of money, which is what we're all really here to do anyways, right?
Yeah. Nice. All right. So we're at advancing prefab. What's the what's the benefit of a show like this? Why should people come?
Yeah, here's what I would say is I always take a few things back, right? These shows aren't cheap, right? You got to travel. We got to fly. I don't know, maybe if you're from Colorado, you don't have to fly, but like it's expensive. It's not free. But if you can take, I always try to take five things back. And then we narrow those down to one or two that we then try to implement. And you can always learn something, even if you think that you're way more sophisticated than anyone else or whatever. But I'm, you know, maybe this is like my teacher background is like, I always think there's something you can learn from someone.
Sure.
And so if you can take one thing back or well, take five and then try to whittle down to one or two and you can implement them, I think there's a ton there. And then the other thing is beyond just the classes, like the networking, like I was just talking to a guy in the conference hall. We're a Viewpoint Vista user for our ERP. He's a Stratus user. He is a Autodesk Construction Cloud user. And I'm like, oh, so are we. And so like we started talking about all these things and we shared contact information. We're gonna have a meeting next week to talk about how we're tracking field productivity in Stratus and how they're implementing and uploading in the Viewpoint, how we're doing it and see if we can't streamline for each other. We're non-competitive, so we're not in the same market, so it doesn't matter. But like that peer network that you can develop, like what if we can share the cost of doing that and it saves both of our companies money and neither of us had to bore the sole financial burden or responsibility to figure it out.
Right.
And everyone, I mean, again, I'm not the smartest guy in the room by any long stretch of the imagination. So like if I can learn from people that are smarter than me, that's what I'm here for, right? I mean, that's the value. If you're looking to come to this conference or any conference, the other thing I would tell people is they have tours. I'll bet you I've seen, I don't know, I said 100, maybe that was a little bit hyperbole, but like I've seen no less than 50 shops in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And every single shop I go to, I learn something. So like have that attitude, I guess, come to the conference, learn about it, dig in, meet people and take it back to your company and then try to, you know, don't take 100 things back because then you're going to overwhelm everyone, but like take one or two and then try to develop them and maybe next year come and speak.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. So as we start to kind of land the plane here, some rapid fire questions for you. What does modeling the future, what does that look like to you?
Modeling the future, modeling like actual detailing or like modeling, like what does it
however
look
you
like?
Interpret that.
I think companies that learn how to leverage AI will advance faster than companies that don't.
Yeah. So kind of a corollary to that, what does innovation mean to you?
I look at innovation as if you are not always continuously improving, then you're getting left behind and you should constantly be striving to innovate at your company. And innovation could be taking a completely paper process to this a digital paper and then to a truly digital workflow. And then like, so it's baby steps, but you should constantly be looking to make people more efficient and make your processes better. That's to me, innovation. It doesn't have to be a full on autonomous welded robot or whatever. Like that's, yeah, that's innovative, but innovation can be just refining your process to take out picks and clicks to make it more efficient for a person to do a very simple task, but they might do it 300 times a day. Well, what if you could take that out and they only have to do one click instead of 10? Well, you've just saved 30, whatever that math is, 30,000 clicks or whatever, right? So like that's impressive. And if you can do that, to me, that's innovation.
Yeah, totally agree. I think where people go wrong, they think of innovation as these, you know, hugely forward, which it could be, but it's also those small kind of 1% improvements that over time you look back and it's a huge leap forward, but in the moment it's just a tiny little
100%.
Yeah. So how do people find out more information on what you guys are doing at UMC or connect with you?
I'm on LinkedIn. And then like our website's www.umci.com. Yeah. Please reach out to us. I'm super big on sharing information if I can and helping drive the industry forward. And you know, if we can get a little more work out of it, a little more business, that'd be even better. And so, yeah, that's the best way to contact us.
Awesome. Well, final question for you. If I could give you all construction power, you could snap your fingers and innovate one thing. What would you pick to innovate?
Oh man, that is a good one. I don't know if it's one thing to innovate, but my goal with technology innovation has always been, I would like for people to show up, work 8 hours a day, feel super accomplished, but go home not dreading the fact that they have 12 hours of work to do the next day. And then they work 12 hours and the next day they have 14 hours of work. And I would, my goal, you know, I'm always striving to be like, is there a way that like a person come in, only work 8 hours a day, feel great about what they accomplished, and then come back the next day like ready and refreshed and feeling like they got something accomplished. Mm-hmm. So if that, I know that's not like really like a easy thing to do, but if I could say that would be, because I think construction, you hear about it with mental health, right? You hear yeah. about it with like, I saw, and I'm going to mess up the stats, so don't quote me on this, but like, I think construction might be the highest, one of the highest rates of like suicide and mental health issues yeah. in like, so why, right? Does that happen? Overwork, burnout, all those things, right? There, mm-hmm. there simply isn't enough hours in the day for most of us to do the jobs that we have. Mm-hmm. So if I could snap my fingers and tomorrow that was solved, I don't know how I'd do it if I'd done it already, but like, that's what I would wish, you know, hope for.
Yeah. I like it. I agree. Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time and joining the show today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. It was great. Thank you.
Awesome.
Bridging the Gap is hosted, directed, and produced by Todd Wyant. Edited and produced by Eric Daniel. Bridging the Gap is an Applied Software Gray Tech Group production. Copyright Applied Software Gray Tech Group 2024.